The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, good morning. Good morning, everyone. And I'd like to talk about one of the central religious movements, sentiments, dedications, or in Buddhism, which is something called going for refuge. And this expression, refuge, or going for refuge, represents for many, many, many Buddhists kind of a central aspect of their orientation, their faith, their commitment, their immersion in the Buddhist religion, Buddhist teachings, Buddhist practice, whatever you'd like. And so much so that some people will ask, you know, who's a Buddhist, or how do you become a Buddhist? The usual answer people are given are that you would go for refuge. You do this, sometimes it's done as even a ceremony. You would have faith in what's called the triple refuge. You'd go for refuge in these three different things. And now to introduce it this way this morning might seem a bit overly religious for people who are coming here just to do some mindfulness practice. I think at the heart of this idea of refuge, it kind of is much wider than anything we can consider religious, because it has to do with the fundamental capacity of our hearts to be free. And freedom has nothing to do with any religion, it has to do with your heart. And so the word for refuge in the ancient Pali language is sarana. And it can also mean a shelter. And some people clearly see the refuges as a protection, that if you can stay close to these refuges, you're protected in all kinds of ways. And certainly they're much more than a protection. And we get a sense of this when the idea that there is an external refuges and three internal refuges. And so those of you who don't know, the three refuges that are the central kind of, you know, representation of Buddhist faith are refuge in the Buddha, refuge in the Dharma, and refuge in the Sangha. The Sangha being the community somehow. Buddha is the founder of the religion, but, you know, that's kind of not as important as the fact that he himself experienced a degree of freedom, of liberation from suffering, that was so profound and so impactful that people have been following in the path that he opened up now for 2,500 years. So he represents, he is kind of the model of what's possible for a human being in terms of freedom. The external Dharma is the teachings, certainly the teachings of the Buddha, teachings of Buddhism that can be quite inspiring. But it also refers to something a little bit more subtle, and has to do with the processes of nature, the natural processes of the mind and the heart that come into play and that we're navigating when we engage in the practice. We're tapping into these natural processes in such a way that the natural processes move us towards goodness, to wholesomeness, to the best qualities within us, and from there to freedom. There are other processes within us. If we spend time, a lot of time, being hostile, that sets in motion whole processes of becoming increasingly hostile people. You know, it shapes us and influences us. And so to take refuge in these externally is partly to be refuge in the sense that there are these natural processes that we're participating in this universe, and we want to align ourselves or take refuge in the ones that are healthy. And the external Sangha, the community, Sometimes it's said, in a very narrow sense, to be the monastic community, the monks and nuns, because they represent publicly fully immersing oneself into this religion, into this practice, into this path of liberation. More importantly, it's said to be the refuge is those people who have tasted or experienced some of the freedom that the Buddha is talking about, some degree of awakening that's palpable and inspiring for others. And it's said that that's the community that's most reliable as a refuge, because the monastic community, some of them are not enlightened, those monks and nuns. And some of their behavior is not exactly inspiring. The institution is inspiring, but not all the monastics are. And so it can be discouraging if that's the only refuge you have. In the modern West, it's fairly common for people also to consider the external refuge to be the community of practitioners they practice with, so the people here at IMC. And I know for me that practicing with others in community has been a real refuge for me, because the values, the momentum, the dedication to practice that exists in the community, I did not find very easily outside of the Dharma. And so it was really helpful for me to kind of be around people who had a lot of the same values. But there we have the same issue as also with monastics. Not everyone in a Buddhist community like IMC is exemplary. And there are times when I'm not exemplary. And so, you know, if you kind of count on just the people here to be perfect embodiments of enlightenment, that can be a little discouraging at times. And so there's support here, but you don't want to be too idealistic about it. But the people who've really experienced some degree of awakening, some degree of freedom, those are the people that are said to be much more reliable. These are all the external refuge. And as an external refuge, some of us rely on that. We rely on the support from it, inspiration from it, guidance from it. And so that's, can be very important for some people, especially when they first come into the practice. When I was a new practitioner, I was tremendously inspired by more experienced practitioners to watch how they did things like wash their dishes, or just how they walk, how they talked, how they conducted their lives. And I, wow, that's possible? There seemed to be so much freedom, peace, compassion in how they conducted themselves that I was really inspired, and it kind of pulled me into the practice. And there were times when practice was quite difficult, and for myself personally, and maybe quite discouraging, and I would just have to open my eyes and look around sometimes at people around me. Oh yeah, this is worth doing, it's possible to do, if they can do it, maybe I can do it. And, it's kind of, so it's fueled by the people around me. So the external refuges. So there's also the internal refuges. And this is really the whole point of the Dharma, I think, the practice, is to find these things inside of ourselves and not to keep them externally. And in that sense, it's interesting, the Buddha referred to, sometimes he talked about three refuges, but sometimes he talked about four refuges. And the fourth refuge is oneself. And he talked about making yourself your own refuge. So what do you discover? What do you do so that you become a support, a protection for yourself? And that is, it's a very powerful thing to do, because then no matter where you go, you bring that protection with you. You bring that support with you. You don't have to rely on something externally. And I think sooner or later, I think we hope that Buddhist practitioners discover this for themselves, because what we want to try to avoid is excessive emphasis on idealism and being idealistic about other people and their expectation, how they're supposed to be and what it means, how they're supposed to be as a good Buddhist and all that. And, we want to accept people as they are in a certain kind of way, and that our happiness not dependent on how they are. And if we can discover the protection, the refuge, the source within ourselves, then it's like carrying your home wherever you go. And so you're always at home, because your home is here. Some people say that Buddhists are turtles. And because we carry our homes with us. I don't know if that's true for turtles, so that's... So the internal refuge, so what is it we... And this is where I think it gets really exciting. And for me, that's when the idea of refuge started to make sense to me and became really inspiring for me, was when I started to feel or experience in myself what seemed to resonate or have an affinity with or seem to be in harmony with or seem to mirror what these external refuges are supposed to be. And so discover inside ourselves capacities. And interesting for the Buddha, in the ancient India, it wasn't so much a matter of discovering some innate essence of who we are, like we are inherently good and take refuge in that, but rather it was to take refuge in our capacity to act well, to engage with the world in appropriate ways, to have take refuge or take have confidence that we know what to do in order to not get caught, not get entangled, not get hostile, not get frayed, not get caught up in cravings. We know how to be in this world. And I think that to naively rely on some inner essence is that's going to do it all, and just kind of discover what that is and then relax into it, has some value. But it becomes too easy that people then don't learn to develop the capacity or the strength of how to live in the world in a wise way and how to make choices about how to act and what to do in a good way. So I'll give you maybe a little example of my going for refuge recently that I did. For me, it was an example of it. Recently, I heard a talk about from a Native American Californian, indigenous Californian man, about the history of his tribe. And he talked about the genocide that the white Americans, when they came to California, imposed onto the natives of the state. And some of the things he said were pretty atrocious. And he talked about how there was a price on the heads of the indigenous people. And if you brought a head in, you get the government, state government would pay for the killing of a Native American. And so I said, really? I never heard that. I didn't learn that in school. So I did some research. And sure enough, it wasn't exactly the way he said it, but it seems like there was a tremendous amount of evil in California in the 1850s. And there was genocide. It wasn't done by everyone, but there were some militias that were organized. And they went around and systematically murdered hundreds of Native Americans in different places around the state. And massacres. And, some of them go out, every week they go out every day and just, shoot people. And the state legislature had a law, an act or something, that the expenses of doing that were reimbursed by the state. And that the governor was behind all this back then. And in fact, the governor and the legislature also in 1850 ruled that it was okay to enslave Native Americans. And so the people not only killed them, but go out and capture them and do all kinds of horror. So horrific things, right? It's quite horrific. So this is part of the background history of California. So I was reading all this, learning all this, and it just happened to be that the next thing I did is I went to meditate. And so it was really, literally, I stopped reading, closed my book, and sat down to meditate. It was time to meditate. And so you can imagine that those memories, what I just read, stayed and was kind of circulating around for a while. And so I was being mindful of that, what was going on. And I could feel internally that I had these thoughts, but I could feel that I was recoiling from these thoughts. like part of me was like my body, both physically and mentally, I was pulling away from them. They were so kind of uncomfortable to have. And I could feel this recoiling. And so that's interesting to watch. This was going on. And so I thought, well, you know, what if I take refuge here? What would it be like to be take refuge in this circumstance? Rely on this Dharma and the practice that I've done all these years. And what it meant is to cease the recoiling and instead go sit myself right down, metaphorically sit my attention right down in the middle of the discomfort that I was feeling. And I didn't turn off the thoughts necessarily, but I sat down in the middle of it. And I immediately had a certain degree of peace. Not that I wasn't uncomfortable with what was going on, but I had the peace of not recoiling. And I kind of felt like I put myself in my heart, and I wasn't in conflict with what was going on. I was sitting in the middle of it. Felt very respectful to sit in the middle of this discomfort and to allow it to be there with this relaxed, open heart. And what was interesting was now I felt I could be changed by it. I could be affected in a good way by it. And I wasn't exactly horrified. I wasn't recoiling. I wasn't angry. I was just, okay, this is tragic. And in the compassionate heart, just feeling that, now I can be changed. This is good. This is a good place to be. I don't know how I'm going to be changed. I don't know what I'll do. But this is the place to be. I trusted that place. And that trusting that place is to me synonymous with going for refuge. I trust the place of sitting mindful and attentive without conflict, without struggles, in the midst of what's going on. And to come back over and over again and sit in the middle of what's going on without pushing anything away, but to learn the art of just staying present and mindful, reopening over and over again, whether it's our joy we have. The other day, I slept in Santa Cruz Mountains under the stars. Well, there weren't many stars because there was a full moon. And on a ridge, without a tent, just sleeping in a sleeping bag. And it was spectacular. And I got up at 1 o'clock one night when it was a full moon and just looked over the mountain ridges after mountain ridges going down. It was spectacular. And to sit, where's the Dharma in that, the refuge in that? To sit in the middle of that. It wasn't to kind of get attached to it or congratulate myself for, you know, how wonderful it was. But there also, to sit in the middle of that and allow oneself to be changed by that, to be open to it. And to have confidence in the inner strength and the ability to sit in the fire or sit in the glow, whatever is going on, it for me is that inner refuge. And to feel the goodness of that, to feel the health of that, to feel the health of not clinging, not getting caught in caught up in self and selfishness, to get a sense of selfishness dropping away and being present, to get a sense of compassion welling up and kindness welling up, to a sense of a profound peace that's present and there in such a way that we're willing to be changed by this world we live in. Not holding the world at bay, not recoiling from it, but available for it. This is feels so good. This is, for me, is the inner refuge. And to have a palpable experience, a visceral experience of that kind of freedom or that kind of presence, to me is tremendously inspiring. And it taught me, yes, the external refuge is valid, is true, and there's an internal refuge for me to go to. To see, to the internal Buddha, in a sense, discover the Buddha in oneself. The internal Dharma. To see that these teachings work, these teachings are validated in our own hearts and minds. Oh, yeah. When the Buddha said that craving brings suffering, I know that all too well. That I've discovered that inside. And then if I let go of the craving, that suffering evaporates. Oh, I know that. I've seen that. I can't always do it. But I know this for myself. That's to see the Dharma in oneself, to know for oneself. And then the Sangha in oneself, What I've identified as that maybe there's different ways of seeing it, but I see it as all the good qualities of heart that are interpersonal. The ways in which we can be friendly, the friendliness that can well up, the kindness that can well up, the generosity that can well up, the integrity that can well up, that all have to do with how we live together in community. That this is not some external rules that we're supposed to follow. It's not like we read the manual of how to be a person in community and then go to human resources and ask them, is being kind a good idea? We discover these qualities inside of ourselves and we see how good they are in the world, to see how good things are. So one of the things that I've gradually learned over my years of practice is to be socially counterphobic. I think what that means is when I'm afraid of something or feel some discomfort with other people, rather than recoiling, rather than going away, is to step towards it and open. The movement in the Dharma for me is the movement of stepping forward to anything and opening the arms really wise and say, in a certain kind of way, saying, here I am, or yes to it. And so if there's social discomfort, to say, okay, let's step towards this now. That was not my instinct when I was younger. But this inner refuge has taught me that this is good, this is valuable, and has showed me at the depths of inside that there's nothing at stake. There's nothing really can be threatened in there. There's a profound place at the core of it all of safety. And the places where I get afraid, the places where I get hurt, certainly can happen, but that's not really at the heart of it all. And so to have practiced this Dharma and really seen the internal Dharma and discovered kind of like through the layers and layers and layers of thoughts and feelings and ideas we have, discover at the heart of it all a place of peace or safety or well-being, freedom, that really can't be touched by anything, can't be destroyed by anything, is a powerful, powerful thing. And so this idea of refuge, to be inspired, to have this profound faith in this, is said to have three qualities, three aspects. Certainly it has to do with faith. And faith is a complicated word. It encompasses many things. People have complicated relationships to it. I kind of sometimes prefer to use the word confidence rather than faith because of the complexity of it. But what's nice about the word faith is that I think of it as a heartfelt quality. It's where we put our hearts. And so we put our hearts in the Dharma or in the practice, and that's where our hearts live or what makes our hearts sing. So something like faith. So it represents people's faith. To have faith, the refuges are what we have faith in. The second is it's an understanding. It's something we know. So sometimes people think of faith as being, you have to believe something on faith. It means that you don't really know, but you just take it as you've been told it's true, and therefore it must be true, or you'll just take it on faith. That's what the expression means. But part of the refuge is to really take refuge means you know something for yourself. And that's continually the kind of the movement of the Buddha's teachings, what he's pointing to. We're trying to come so you know for yourself, and no one can take it away. There's a final exam you're supposed to get in Buddhism. I don't know, I'm kind of a little bit joking here, but there is a kind of final exam that you could, in a thought experiment. So you practice for maybe a good length of time, you feel like you've really gone deep in the practice, it's really supported you, and you really believe in it, you have a lot of faith in it, then you get the exam. And the exam is the Buddha shows up. And he tells you, oh, by the way, I have something to tell you. You know, I was wrong. I had it all wrong. And then, so what do? And you pass the exam if you say, it doesn't matter to me what the Buddha says. I know for myself. So, really, so the idea of knowing something. So to the part of what it means to go for refuge is to go with what we know for ourselves. We've discovered it for ourselves. And for example, we know that if we cling to something, it'll hurt. That doesn't seem like a particularly religious thing. But in Buddhism, that's one of the most profound realizations a person can have. Because if you learn then to let go of the clinging, that hurt that comes from clinging dissipates. And that seems like a simple, maybe minor thing to say. But if you apply that to the most deepest suffering, the deepest hurts, the deepest kind of struggles that we have, and understand how deeply there's kind of clinging. Most of us cling in ways we don't even know yet because we haven't gone through the layers of the mind. And to really do this thoroughly and let go of the clinging, and to really know something about that for oneself, then at some point you're going to know it so well that even if the Buddha said he's wrong, you're going to say to yourself, well, I don't know what's going on with him. But I know that if I walk out of here and cling, I'll suffer. I know that I'm in a better place right now not clinging. I'm going to choose not to cling, not to contract, not to get hostile, not to get caught up in, you know, something. And that's a powerful movement, to know for oneself a degree of inner peace, stability, inner health, and to know how that's lost by how we get caught by things, attached to things, and to know you have a choice and to exercise the choice not to do it. And that's the third meaning of refuge, that refuge means when people go for refuge, they're taking an orientation. It's an orientation or a commitment that people have. And so if you say orientation, it means I'm going to orient myself around what the Buddha, Dharma, Sangha means, what these refuges mean. Or I'm going to orient myself around what I've discovered for myself inside about freedom and compassion, about non-clinging, about peace. And that I can't always be there, but this is important enough that I'm going to orient my life around this. I can't imagine anything being more important than this. That somehow being in this world with an open, free, compassionate heart is more important than just about anything that I can imagine. And so I'm going to orient my life around that and then let everything else come out of that. When I studied with a man named Robert Aiken, a Zen teacher in Hawaii many years ago, he had this wonderful little teaching, first time I heard it. A lot of people came to him and said, you know, this Buddhism stuff, it's great, this Zen stuff, but, you know, how do I apply it? How do I bring it into my life? And I think he heard it so often, he got a little tired of it. And so he said, you know, that's one way to look at it. The other way is to put the practice in the... Let the practice be your life, and then ask the question, let my practice be the center, and then ask the question, how do I bring my life into my practice? So which direction do you go? And I think for people who go for refuge, it's the latter. The question is, now how do I incorporate my life into this new way of living? As opposed to, how do I try to live, you know, a little bit nice, you know, in my life? So going for refuge is an orientation that can take the form of a commitment or a real vow, a real dedication, a devotion. This is what my life is about. This is really important. And it's an interesting exercise to ask ourselves, what are you devoted to? What do you dedicate your life to? And if you really are honest about it, is this really worth it? Is this really what you want your life to be about? Some people, without even knowing it, even because it's so maybe built into how they were raised, the higher dedication is money. or a higher dedication is financial security, or the higher dedication is relationships. That's what's important. Life is all about having the right relationship or being in relationship, or the high or status, or watching more websites, TV. You know, if you add up all the hours we spend on doing some of our activities and decide that's what we're dedicated to, what we give the most hours to, aside from sleep maybe, that would be an interesting kind of analysis. And so part of what refuge means is an article of faith. It's something that we know. It's knowledge in a certain kind of way, experiential knowledge. And it's an orientation or a commitment that people have. And finally, I'd like to say one more thing about this refuge that's kind of provocative. And I say it both to be provocative and also to kind of try to ensure that this talk is not too heavy. You know, being too religious or all that. It's been said that when a person really has gone for refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha, they have no grounds to ever again complain. What do you think of that? Does that make sense based on what I've said? Or can you imagine that's the true? Or is is complaining so important that in fact that you have a lot, you don't think of yourself as having faith in complaining, but in fact if you really step back and look, boy do I ever, I have faith in complaining. I do a lot of it, but when you take refuge, there's no more cause for complaint. So that's a kind of provocative, thought-provoking idea, and what's the alternative to complaining when things are not right in the world? And how do we show up for that? How do we show up for injustice? And how do we show up for some of the hate that exists in our world? So refuge. Beautiful quality. For some Buddhists, the movement towards refuge, the clarity they have, yes, to this kind of idea of refuge, is as impactful, is comparable in personal impact as an experience of awakening is. It's that profound, that much of a transformation or change for some people. For some people like me, that was a gradual transformation, but over these years, the degree to which refuge has really taken hold in me, compared from where I began to where I am now, it's quite dramatic. And I have so much confidence and trust in this Dharma and the practice and the awakening, the Buddha, that I kind of feel like it's at the core of who I am and how I find my way in the world. And for some people, it comes very quickly. And somehow the Dharma speaks to them right away, and they know they found their home or on their faith or something. So those are my thoughts this morning. We have a few minutes. If anyone would like to ask any questions or make some comments or offer a refuge testimonial, that would be great.
I'll offer a refuge testimonial from way back in 2005 when I went for refuge with you, Gil. And it really changed my life. Well, it continues to. So thank you.
To know. Yeah, so every 2 or 3 years we have a formal refuge ceremony at IMC. And we have a refuge class, and then we have an evening here, a very special kind of ceremony of people, formal refuge ceremony. And a few people have done that. So Martha did that. There's a mic somewhere. If you can pass it forward. No.
S- So a year ago you had a refuge ceremony. I was part of it. It was very delightful. You also talk about stream entry. So, and you said that once you enter the stream, there's no turning back. It'll take you right there. So what's the difference between going for refuge and a stream enterer?
So the classic idea is that the first stage of awakening, or first real significant transformation the person goes through that's internal, is called stream entry, entering the stream of this flow of practice. And the most common description or definition the Buddha had for someone who's a stream enterer is their faith, their refuge, has become unshakable. The word is unshakable knowing, So now they know it so well for themselves that their faith cannot be shaken. So we're really looking for not a belief system. So don't spend too much time reading books on Buddhism. You know, I write them, so. So read them sometimes. But don't look for these books as being, where you're going to get it. It's an inner personal knowing for oneself that's unshakable.
Just to follow up on that question, when you say knowing, do you mean such that you've had enough experience that you trust, despite the fact that you may feel another way. You trust your experiences, that you've known that you've experienced freedom before.
Absolutely. So it's an experiential knowing. So we really experience something for ourselves. But what I wanted to add to that is that it's a living experience that continues to live in us, so that we can almost touch into some aspect of it any moment at all. And most simply, how you can see it is that if a person knows that closing down doesn't work, and knows what it's like to open up, then we might close down, but we have unshakable confidence that staying closed is not useful, and we know the path, we know the movement it takes to open up again, and so that's we tap into that, we know that in the present moment again, it's not so far away. That knowing, it isn't like it happened 10 years ago, and it's a good. I know it's a good idea. Does that make sense? Okay. Yes.
This is not really about refuge per se, but as you were talking about refuge in ourselves, and you were talking all about that and speaking about what one finds in oneself and so forth, I was thinking about, okay, so there is self, because we're talking about it, and then there's the doctrine of no self, and then there's this concept of mind, and so how do all of those kind of sort out?
I think that there's a quite appropriate way of using the expression self that refers to this psychosomatic thing here. we use the word self to point to where our responsibility resides. No one else can make choices. Inner choices of how to live, what to do, how we respond, what we say, as we can. And so to really kind of, this is where that responsibility resides. So, I'm responsible, this is here. And so it's a pretty straightforward thing to do. The problem that happens is that as soon as you have this notion of self, it's a magnet for a lot of baggage. It's a magnet for a lot of attachments. It's a magnet for a lot of conceit that we pack onto it. And so that causes a lot of suffering. And so so the baggage, the extra baggage, is what we're freeing ourselves from. And a lot of that baggage, at the essence, is born in our own heart, in our own minds, since you talked about minds. And so not only are we emptying ourselves from all this baggage, this self-concept, we're also then clearing out, house cleaning, clearing out the mind from all this extra stuff as well. And so someone who is fully liberated no longer believes that there's anything, any essence, any inherent self to protect or to build up or all that. But you know, conventionally there's still a self.
And experiencing, deciding, acting.
Sorry?
Experiencing, deciding, and acting.
Still continue. Being. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
So, what do you have confidence in? Do you have anything inside of you yourself, anything that you've known, that resonates at all with what you hear in the Dharma and the Buddhist teachings and the practices? Have you touched into anything? And some people have touched things deep inside that independent of Buddhist practice, but when they come to Buddha and say, oh, yes, now they're speaking to that. But what do you have? Do you have some kind of confidence in something, inspiration inside? What do you know for yourself that is your inner treasure? So, thank you all.